Welcome to Season 5 of the Fight Science Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Sullivan. In this series, we are further expanding our knowledge by speaking to experts in the fields of physiology, psychology, nutrition, strength and conditioning, and mindset training. We'll be speaking to the coaches and practitioners who do this every day, and to the researchers and academics who are at the forefront of the sciences. Today, our guest is Dr. Andy Galpin. Andy is a tenured professor in the Center for Sport Performance at California State University, Fullerton. He has an undergraduate degree in exercise science, a master's degree in human movement sciences, and in 2011 earned his PhD in human bioenergetics. After completing his PhD, he opened up his own lab at CSU called the Biochemistry and Molecular Exercise Physiology Laboratory, which studies the acute responses and chronic adaptations of human skeletal muscle in response to high force, velocity, power, and fatiguing exercise from the whole body down to the individual muscle fiber and even into the individual DNA. If that sounds complex to you, then it absolutely should, because Dr. Galpin's work is truly ahead of the curve. So much so that outside of his day job within academia, he works with a select number of athletes to optimize their total performance. In this episode, Dr. Galpin and I discuss how he takes his extensive knowledge about the human body and performance and helps develop more complete, efficient, and advanced combat athletes. This is such an interesting episode with insights from one of the most renowned practitioners in the field. So let's get to it. All right. Green light means we are live. So back for another episode of the Fight Science Podcast. So joined by a very, very special guest today. We're joined by Dr. Andy Galpin. Andy, whereabouts are you located? You're in California, right?
Yes, sir. I live in Southern California, so Long Beach.
Excellent. What a spot, hey. How's everything going out there with what's going on?
Dude, the whole state's shut down from the virus. The fucking whole West Coast is burning. It's not great times right now.
Yeah, I saw a photo of, was it San Fran? And I think it was like a drone photo of the orange, and it was just like, oh my God. We went through a lot of wildfires here in January back then.
Yes.
And that was crazy, and the smoke, and just, it's not fun, but yeah, compounding everything for you guys must be, it's like something out of a movie, hey?
Yeah, it's pretty wild, man. We can't go outside really because the air quality is so bad. Ash coming down everywhere still. It's like, you feel like you're in the movie Road Warriors. Like it's wild. So if that wasn't enough, everything else going on, just like, whatever, man. It's like, I got the internet. I got kids. Let's just go.
Yeah, you got to do what you got to do. Hey, well, I'll save the introduction because I'm sure everyone that's listening will know who Dr. Andy Galpin is. But just to dive in and give a little bit of context before we go into our talk about combat sports, can you talk to us about your PhD, Andy, and what you studied, how you got into it, and then how you got into working at CSU?
Sure. My undergrad degree is in exercise science, and then my master's is in basically the same thing. So then I got a PhD in what's called human bioenergetics. So this is a fancy way of saying muscle physiology, muscle metabolism, things like that. So I did that for, you know, the 10-year launch, if you will, and then got my job here at Cal State Fullerton, and I've been here for about a decade. So I teach at the graduate level sports nutrition, program design, muscle physiology, things like that. It's kind of a third of my job. The other third of my job is, you know, we have a center for sport performance. So within that, we've got about 7 laboratories, and the entire mission of the center and all of the labs within are to study and disseminate information that enhances sport performance. So my lab specifically within that is a muscle biology lab. So we take muscle samples from individuals and we study it, kind of what I say at the whole muscle. So meaning like actual performance, do you jump higher, do you squat more weight, things like that, all the way down to the cellular, molecular, and sometimes genetic level. But we don't do it in disease. We don't do it for those models. It's all for sport performance for the most part. So running those laboratories is the other sort of third of my job. And then I work with professional athletes on there. So a lot of combat sports, folks that you kind of mentioned or alluded to, and then some from other areas as well. But that's basically what I do. And that's kind of how I got here.
Yeah, brilliant. And for the Sport Performance Center, how did that come about? Was that something that was pre-existing and then you got a job there? Or is it something that you created? It just, you don't see that a lot where, especially at the cellular level, when you're looking for mechanistic studies,
it is usually in those populations that you said, like the older population. Is this something, was this you're doing, or was it already existing at CSU, or how did that come to be?
So the center had actually been started, I believe, the year before I got there by Lee Brown. And Lee is a Lifetime Achievement Award winner in the field. He's probably the one of the few folks most responsible for the concept of post-activation potentiation, overspeed training, things like that, right? So Lee is quite a legend in the field. And so he had the center going, and they had the human performance lab and the exercise physiology labs. And then he brought me in because he wanted to add that molecular component. So he kind of had this vision of bringing in somebody who's going to do the molecular, the cellular side of sport performance. And there's very few people in the world doing it. And I had that vision of doing the same thing. And he kind of posted the job, and I was like, what the fuck? Like, really a strength conditioning job where they're going to let me do biopsies? And he's like, what the fuck? Like, somebody who knows sport? And so it was kind of serendipitous that way. So then he brought me in. Of course, I started my wet lab, the biology portion of it. And then he retired, and I took over the entire center. So it's a little bit of both of your answer, to be honest. He just sort of saw the future. He's like, he realized that this is one avenue of sport performance that needs to be brought in, and no one else is doing this. And then he found somebody that happened to have a very unique combination of skills. And so to me, like, I built those skills intentionally. I honestly, for maybe the 6 years prior to that, I thought, I can't believe nobody's doing this. I thought it was a hole. I thought it was, I was just shocked no one had done that yet. And so I was like, well, I'm going to combine this thing with sport performance that I already had a background in with the molecular side, because they both interest me, but I didn't see anybody putting them together. So part of it was my creation of, you know, building myself in an area that no one had solved yet. And then part of it was just straight up ass luck, man. Like, he happened to want something like that in that center. So that's kind of how those things came together.
Yeah, absolutely. Timing is everything. Yeah, I don't think too many people who do successful things in their field would argue with that. But let's start talking about combat sports, Andy. And how do you get into that? Because obviously, I think you're playing it off kind of a bit more mild, but you're working with a lot of really high level guys, and you have done so for quite a long time. How did that all come to be? So obviously, you have your background in academia, but like you said, you have a background in athletics yourselves and weightlifting, powerlifting. How did the worlds collide and merge so you're working in combat sports?
Yeah, so I played college football and played everything else growing up. So just the more traditional sports. I didn't play a single combat sport, nothing like it. I didn't do karate as a kid, like zero experience with anything like that. My roommate in college was actually a huge MMA fan. He played football for like a year, but then quit because he just wasn't good. It wasn't his area, but he loved training. So he would drive up and train at Team Quest, which Randy Couture, and all those folks, Dan Henderson, Matt Lindland, Chael Sonnen, these guys were all in the same room. In fact, I think his first coach was Chris Levin.
Oh, wow.
And Nate Corey, all these guys were in the same place. And so he started training there. So then he came home one day and he's like, hey, man, my coach is on this TV show that they're starting. And everyone at that time had heard of Tito Ortiz and like all that stuff, right? You'd watch him fight Ken Shamrock and kind of like the big ones. So I'm like, all right, we watched that first season of The Ultimate Fighter. And I was like, man. And as I started to increase my education, I started to realize all the holes scientifically in what we would call exercise physiology, right? So it's like, oh, this is what happens when you exercise and this doesn't happen. And I started thinking, like, there's no way what we've studied is going to explain what these folks are doing. And so the wheels just started turning, and I'm like, no way you're telling me this doesn't happen when you do this. And you know, you can see all the examples I've come up with. And so physiologically, I just started thinking, this is really interesting. It's not the, you know, high jumper versus marathoner model, right? Cause it's like, okay, it's super clear when you do one explosive movement for 5 seconds and then a 4-hour run. But just like everything in between was just left open, right? And I'm like, how do these dudes do this for 25 minutes or at least 15 minutes or whatever? So that sort of planted a seed. A few years go by, I'm competing in other sports, and I finished my master's. We'd started a gym in Memphis, and one of our first clients were some local MMA guys. And I finished competing. I had about a month or so before I was going to leave to another state to do my PhD. And the head guy there, who was multiple-time world champion in jiu-jitsu, so a very legitimate black belt back then, was like, you know, why don't you come over and try? And you guys, you can just train for free for a couple months or whatever. So of course, like everyone's story is the same here. Once you try it for a minute, you're like, oh,
yeah.
I'm the same. So I dove in there. And so as soon as I moved up to my PhD, I was like, I'm going to do this. This is the next sport I'm going to do. So I did a lot of that stuff and trained a lot when I was competing. So then I started working more with the local fighters in the area, which is crazy, dude. I was in the middle of nowhere, Central America, like Central United States of America, not Central America.
Yeah.
And this tiny little shit gym in the middle of absolute nowhere. I mean, legit, bro. We were fighting in like the fairgrounds. It was like crazy. People just like would show up on fight day and be like, okay, you, do you have a mouthpiece? No. Okay, let me borrow yours. And just like basketball shorts, and guys are getting to fights in the stands, and be like, okay, well, hold on, don't fight now. Like, you're up in three fights. Like, it was just mayhem. And I think there was like a core of 10 of us or something, generally. Probably 7 made it to the UFC. So it was nuts. It was like, oh shit. So that was my first exposure with actual UFC folks. And I'm like, dang, we're in the middle of nowhere. I'm like, okay, you're fighting in the Dream. And you're like, what, Dream tournament? We're going to Japan? Like, what? How did this happen? Or, you know, so it just started kind of going there. And then of course, when I came out to California, it didn't take long for kind of word to spread. And then the local California folks started jumping up. And then Mark Munoz was a wrestling coach at Cal State Fullerton, where I'm at. And then TJ Dillashaw was one of our kinesiology students. And so it didn't take long to be like, oh, hey, you know, we have mutual interests, and then all the stuff. And then there's so many fighters down here. So that's sort of the genesis story, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just word by mouth. Hey, I find like most people I talk to, it's not some elaborate marketing plan or some marketing agency guru that you dump heaps of money in. It's, I did a good job with this guy, and he told this guy, and this guy told. And then next thing you know, you got 20, 30 guys there at your front door.
I've never done a single thing like that. I've never done a single buy of Instagram stuff. I mean, I get those daily from people. Oh, let's align. I can connect you with blah, 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 this person. I've never done that once. In fact, I've said no to more fighters than I've said yes to. Easily, not even close. Far more fighters I've said no to. I have a full-time job. It's a pretty difficult one. And so this stuff is working with professional athletes. Has always been, it's always gone into the, I guess, like passion part of my day, right? This is something I do for fun. And actually for the first, like maybe 7 years, I didn't even make it public. Like, I'm just like, I'm not telling people about it. It just, I didn't care to, like, I wasn't trying to hide it, but I'm just like, this is just no more than you. I'm going to tell you that, like, hey, I'm trying to get better at pushups in my garage. Like, nobody gives a shit. It's not like I was not trying to build a brand. I've never done anything like that. I've never taken a marketing seminar, nothing like that. But it's, the difference is, it's not my livelihood. I have a full-time, very well-paying job with excellent stuff. So I was able to do these as straight passion projects. And so I always wanted to do very few fighters, go very high touch, and really try to solve problems. Not just high profile ones. It's just, there's a bunch of things I find interesting. And if it's one of those markers, I don't care if you're fighting in LFA or what, like, none of those things matter to me too much. I mean, the profile ones are going to come, the paydays would come. I just wanted to do cool things, like, you know, work with folks that go into the Olympics, or work just, you know, just something that people gave up their whole life to do. And they knew that the reward was probably very minimal. And so I was like, man, that's a train I want to be on. So let's go, like, let's get after something. So that's kind of, yeah, none of those other things have ever gotten interest to me to. But again, fairness, it's not my livelihood. So fair play to those of you that are trying to eat. I think you got to maybe have to have some sales. I get it.
Yeah. It's like a double-edged sword, right? Like, it's almost like the less you're trying, the more they're coming type thing, because you are working with some seriously high-level guys. You said it there, Andy. There's a bunch of things that you find interesting. And I think anyone that's kind of come into combat sports who has a academic science background, you do, like you explained, you just sit there and you go like, what the fudge, like, this is just not what I was typically taught when I was at university and sitting in my lecture hall, I read in the textbook. How do you go about that? How do you reconcile that? And how do you go about it, say, if athletes come to you and they go, hey, Dr. Galpin, I want to work with you, I want to get ready, because you do it all, right? Like, it's not like you're just doing the nutrition, or you're just rocking up and saying, okay, this is how you cut the weight, or hey, Dr. Galpin, do me up a strength row. You're doing everything. Like, quite literally everything. How's that process unfold for you?
So it's honestly, I hate this question. Not because it's a bad question, but because I have a bad answer. Meaning it's so different for every individual.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. Some of the times we'll start these conversations, and I guess the answer is I have an extremely robust, in-depth, I guess you call it an assessment. And from there, I try to figure out, hey, you don't need me. You don't need a new strength coach. You don't need this. What you need is, for example, all of your problems are your weight cut. Or I don't think it's your weight cut at all. You don't need to hire Mike Dolce, right? Don't hire Jordy Sullivan. You don't need to hire these guys. What you need to do is get a sports psychologist because you're freaking out. Or whatever it is, right? Like the inverse, like you don't need, and so I'm not an expert. I don't know. I guarantee you, you'd school me in weight cut stuff. I guarantee you know more about that. I know Mike Dolce would. Like I know, I could tell you 100 strength coaches that know more about strength conditioning for this stuff. I could tell you 1,000 people now. I could tell you 5 or 6 that know more about getting advanced blood work done. Like I could, any aspect of this stuff, sleep stuff, recovery stuff. I know somebody who knows more than me. I know it personally. I guarantee it. But what I have over everyone else is I know a lot more about the science of all those things. And so the difference is, you know, the analogy of a T, right? So you have a vertical portion and a horizontal portion. There's lots of people in the field, you know, Dr. Capo, I work with, that I'd say are more vertical. It's like they have real expertise in one niche, in one area. But I have a little more horizontal. And so my job is to be the horizontal guy where I can look at everything the athlete's doing and understand this is your real problem area. I'm not the expert in that, but I know this guy in Australia. Let me go give him a call. I know this girl in England. She's really good at this. Let's bring her on the team to fill this problem. And that's helpful for the athletes because when they're looking at themselves, they're just thinking, okay, I got to sleep better. I got to meditate. I got to improve my recovery. I got to eat. And they know they want to do all these things, but they don't know where to get started. And they reach out to somebody and they're like, okay, I want 5% of your purse. I want 5%. And all of a sudden they look and they're like, well, if I bring all these people on, there goes half my purse. I can't afford that because I'm making 15 grand a fight. Or even if they're making 200 grand a fight, like they don't want to shell out 100 grand. And they're like, well, I don't even know, like, is the sleep thing really going to work? Does it matter that much? And there's all these problems. And so for me, they generally pay me to be the one look and be like, no, not that this wouldn't help a little bit, but this is the big area. Invest your money here. Invest your time in this thing. This is where you're going to see big dividends. And then as your career goes on or we solve this problem, now we might see a different hole and we do it from there. So that's in general what I'm doing. I'm happy to talk about specifically how we do that if you'd like, but that's the terrible answer to that question I always have is I might spend 10 weeks on somebody just doing their nutrition. I might do a year of just their strength and conditioning. It totally depends on what I believe the athlete actually needs. And if that I need to provide that, I can do that at a reasonably high level in a lot of areas. But if we really need to bring on someone with real problem solving areas or skills in that area, then I'll bring somebody else or recommend somebody else bring on the team. So that's generally how I go about it.
Hey guys, quick interruption of the podcast so I can mention a project that I've put far too much of my time into over the last year, TrainAid. Let's keep this brief though. What is TrainAid? It's a line of only a handful of lifestyle and performance supps that I use with all of my clients from the everyday person to UFC world champions. Who is it for? Well, that's the thing. They may not be for everyone, and we're not trying to pretend like they are. To decide if it is right for you, what we have done is created algorithms that based on short questionnaires will tell you 1, if the supplement is appropriate for you, and 2, how much of it you should take and when. When is it happening? Our first product, TrainAid Hydration Solution, is being released at the end of this year, so head to www.trainaid.com to stay in the loop. That's TRAINADE.com. All right, back to the podcast.
Yeah, but even to what you're saying, you've got to give yourself credit because that's an art in itself, right? To be able to step back and assess all of these things and then have the knowledge and kind of the selflessness to say, hey, you know what? I may not be the best in this. Go see this person. That's a real art in itself. And that's something that a lot of practitioners don't have. So I think you might be biting from the humble pie a bit too much there.
Yeah, but you know, like I have an advantage. It's not fair because I don't need to do this. Like I don't need to protect a client. And like I said, the reason I got into combat sports, I was in the NFL before. Like I've been those things. And don't get me wrong, I like that money a lot better. Baseball money is way better. But I got into this sport, I didn't come up with karate, right? I didn't come up as a wrestler. And I'm saying that to say, like, this was not a natural passion of mine. It wasn't something I started doing, and it wasn't something I did. So I got into this stuff because, like, I just really, again, like people who are selling out everything for some bigger purpose. So for me, I don't need the money. I want to be on people's side who, like, again, are going to do something that is going to be the thing that they remember their whole life. So I don't want to do anything besides help that person hit that thing. Like, I don't understand. If I wanted to do it so I can cash a big paycheck, I'd spend more time in baseball. Cause I'm telling you, man, those dudes pay more in a month than most fighters do, like, easily. So, and I can do that. And they basically subsidize and work with the combat sports, but that's why. So it puts me in a position where, again, I can say, look, you don't need me, or you don't need this, or you don't need this. Cause I can look at it objectively and give them real, pretty honest feedback on that stuff. And it doesn't hurt me at all. Like, I've been so fortunate to be around Mike Dolce, Tony Ricci. I mean, Corey Peacock. Like, I know all these people in the field, and there's not one of them I would have any hesitation to be like, no, either go to. In fact, I just did it with Phil Dara, one of my girls. I'm just like, no, you need to work with Phil. I've been in your strength condition for a year, but you're down. But you need to work with Phil. 100%. My salary got cut to zero. I said, I'll go pro bono right now until you get back in. Pay Phil. Right. And not like, and I'm not that rich. I'm a teacher, for God's sake. But just because, like, that's what the fighter needed. She was on her last straws. Like, she hasn't had a fight in a long time for just bad luck. And I'm like, I want to see this thing succeed. So I don't have the advantage of being like, God, I can't lose a client because, like, I mean, I can. My small part of my income is stable. So that gives me a real advantage over most people in the field that allows me to really just be in it for the athlete. And the same thing with saying no to an athlete. So I don't have them on my squad if I don't really, really, really want to work with that person. So that gives me a different level of, honestly, love. And it's a different relationship I have with every fighter that I've worked with at this level. So I want that high touch stuff, man. I don't want to be just like, okay, you know, 2 weeks are out, here's your check, come and do this. Okay, peace out. That's not the type of relationships I want to foster. So I want these people to win, and I want to do whatever it takes to help them.
Yeah. And it's like a two-way street. One of the coaches I work very closely with talks about when he was establishing his gym, which is now very, very successful, said for years, it's like you're trying to sell a dream that only you can see. And that's what these athletes are trying to do, right? And I guess it's people like yourself that are saying, hey, like, yes, I believe in you, and I can see the dream as well. And I know you're not there yet to make it worth my while, but I will support you to get there. Yeah, it's amazing to hear.
Yeah, man, it's just fun being a part of that stuff. I guess it's probably clearly because of my sport background. Like, I like being in team sports. I like helping other people win and all that. And I can't compete anymore. So this is my way to be able to compete in something. Right. And to be up at 3 o'clock in the morning, coaching somebody in Mongolia and coaching, like, you know, and just staying up all night and then trying to watch them perform at 4 in the morning, cause they're in stupid Japan or whatever. And then just being like, I got to sleep for 2 days cause I've been doing night shift. But I just love it because I'm like, man, that was fun. Like, that was really cool to give everything I had to something. And then sometimes I get knocked the shit out and you're just like, and then my wife, like, has a panic attack and she wants to throw up, you know, because she's like, how do you do this? Like, I get emotional. Like, I cry sometimes when they win or lose. And she's like, what do you do this to yourself? And I'm just like, man, I don't know any other way. Like, I just love it. I just love it. You know, I don't know where I'd be if I didn't have that passion outlet for something. I guess, like, I don't know. You'll probably never see me cry over getting a paper rejected or something. I don't care that much.
Yeah, but if one of the guys gets armbarred in the octagon, then yeah, it does hit the feels. But Andy, let's dive into that. You said just before there's a bunch of things that you found interesting when you got into the combat sports. And I have a feeling, especially with your background, what were those things? Was it more around, like, say, the training load? Because I know a lot of SNC coaches or a lot of academics I've spoken to, they kind of look at, like, the training schedule of MMA athletes and they go, you know, what the hell's going on here? What was it that you looked at this sport and went, yeah, you know, I can definitely help here?
Yeah, this is a good question. Several things. I would say when you looked at the general practices of the weight cut, that was a clear one where I'm like, all right, you're stepping off the scale and just drinking Gatorade and you just lost 18 pounds of water. We can do better here. Right. Or just you're drinking water, I guess, even worse. Right. We can do better. You're losing 20 pounds. This is all the basic stuff that it didn't take a rocket scientist to be like, all right, I'm not a world expert in this stuff yet, but I know I can do a whole lot better than what you're doing. the training as well. Like you're looking at, I mean, back in the day, 2010, I think, no, 2008 maybe, I gave a talk at the NSCA National Convention on training. And I just looked at every single study ever published on anyone in combat. There was like 1600 studies or something. And I put it together and I basically did a meta analysis and a systematic review. And I put together a physiological profile, what we have, what are the strengths. And you look at it and then you compare that to what they're doing, both, you know, in the gyms I'm at, with the people I'm talking to, and then what's being shown on media stuff. And I'm like, there's no concept here of basic strength conditioning practices. So yeah, I think I could help that, right? Again, I don't know how to train an MMA athlete at the time, but I know that what you're doing for your strength conditioning side is not appropriate. You could get a lot better. Optimal is never gonna happen, but it could get a lot better, right? So those were two big areas. And then within that, I guess the third piece was the conditioning aspect. So just looking at what everyone was doing and saying, okay, even from a basic metabolism standpoint, like there's a lot of spots you're missing that I feel like could be integrated fairly easily, and that would have a big impact. So I'd say those are the three areas that drew my interest in terms of there's a scientific niches here that I think I could fill with minimal effort.
Yeah, absolutely. How do you go about reconciling, say, like the strength training with the skills training and getting that in? And is it difficult that you find, or how do you go about, one, getting the buy-in, and then what do you do to say, hey, this is the goal, we want to do this? How do you go about all that process?
As I mentioned, the thing I do that's probably a bit unique with every individual is that big, huge assessment. And I do that with the fighter, ideally their head coach, if they have one. And then ideally oftentimes they have one to two other kind of like main coaches, if you will. Sometimes this is also a strength conditioning coach proper as well. And so I put the individual through that assessment. I put all the coaches through that assessment, and then I do it as a team, put them all together in the same room. And that includes, it's initially just a questionnaire, right? So it's everything from how are you psychologically on fight night? How are you in training? And there's all this psychological stuff. Then it's lifestyle stuff, and then it's sleep. And then we get into your training. And then I get into specifically, so where are we at in terms of Muay Thai skill? How about Muay Thai strength? How about Muay Thai speed? How about Muay Thai endurance? And I use these terms, right? And then how about boxing strength and boxing endurance and boxing speed and boxing reaction time, blah, 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 blah. What I'm really trying to do is suss out, again, where are the holes in performance? Is it something that you're just wrecking because of a bad weight cut? We don't really need to change your strength conditioning. You're just ruining it 3 days before. Is it the opposite? Is it all your conditioning program? Are you overdoing it there? Is it the fact that your boxing coach is not communicating at all with the rest of the team? And so now your training volume is completely out of whack. Is it intrinsic? Like where are the real issues? And so it's pretty honestly easy to figure that out once you have that conversation with each individual and the team. And so I basically have them score themselves on a 0 to 10, 10 being compared to the best fighter in the world in your division, right? That's your metric. So are you, you know, how are you in terms of your jiu-jitsu skill? Not terms of like, well, everyone in my gym, in terms of who's the best in jiu-jitsu in your entire division, where are you at? And so rarely are folks 10 out of 10 on anything unless they are that person. Like Brian Ortega, okay, I'm probably going to give him a close to a 10 as I could get in jiu-jitsu in 145, right? They're just, it's hard to argue past that, right? But the question then becomes, well, where's he at in your wrestling? Where are you at on your speed? Where are you at on your boxing? Where are you at on your boxing technique? Where are you at on your, like all these different things. Now, those things I didn't know. Obviously, I go into that guy knowing he's 10 here, 9.5, whatever. Okay, I don't care is the point. That's the least of my concerns, but I'm trying to figure out the other holes. So within that, I will, of course, watch many of their competitions. If they have multiple types of sports competitions, so even if they're a UFC fighter, have they done Nogi World Championships or something? Let me go watch that. Have they done some amateur kickboxing, find on YouTube or something? Let me watch that. And then what I generally do is I kind of categorize them as one of three personality traits, if you will. And I got this from Robert Fallis. I think this is beautiful. And I use this with them the first day. But he basically says, you want to be world champion, you have to be world caliber in at least two of the following three categories. You don't have to have all three, but you have to be at least world caliber. And again, world caliber is relative to the other people. So you have to be in the top 10 in your sport in these two categories, right? They're all world caliber compared to you and I, but are they world caliber compared to the other 10? That's the metric. So he says mixed martial artists are either fighters, competitors, or athletes. A fighter is somebody, you could even come up with examples of individuals here because it kind of makes it easier. But fighters generally like fighting. They'd fight 50 times, 100 times. They don't care. They tend to not really mind losing that much because they just love fighting. They take short notice fights. They don't care. Up a weight class, sure. Like, these things aren't that big a deal to them. They tend to not mind getting punched in the face as much. They tend to outshoot their actual conditioning, which is really important. So they will do far better with their conditioning because they don't care as much about being in the fight. It's not such a big deal to them because they've done it 1,000 times, but they just feel like they could do it 1,000 times. And so they overperform their conditioning in the fights. They tend to pay less attention to detail. Their preparation is usually awful scientifically, right? Because they just want to show up and fight. The fighter or the competitor is someone who hates losing at anything. Like I said, fighters, they don't really care about losing. I'll just stop. Give me an example of someone in the UFC who's a fighter. Nate pops Diaz. Okay, clearly, right? Record of 20 and 15 or whatever, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They don't fight to win fights. They fight to beat you up, right? So they always lose on points. They are their high finish rates. And they think they want to fight if your face is more messed up. And in their mind, they did. Like, that's the metric. That's the ultimate metric. They're not there. They're not point fighters, all this stuff, right? So if you look at someone like a Diaz, whichever one you pick, you can actually predict where they're going to struggle and where they could succeed. And so then your training, your set, in my opinion, should take care of those. Let's make sure we train them appropriately for their strengths, but also then prepare them for their weaknesses. You know how Nate Diaz is going to lose every fight. You know how Nick Diaz lost every fight. You know this going in. So, like, you better address those issues. You know what they're going to be able to handle. And I can come back and actually give you specific examples of that if you want. But moving on to the competitor, a competitor doesn't want to lose anything. So a competitor will do whatever it takes in the round to win the round because they don't want to lose a single exchange. They don't want to have one misstep, right? They want their technique to be perfect every single time. And they get infuriated when they're not perfect, right? Like, they're not necessarily fighters. That could be there or not, but fighting to them is just a way that they can compete with really high stakes, and it's very, very difficult, right? So who would be a competitor that comes to mind? But think of George St. Pierre. By his own admission, he's not a true fighter, right? It's not natural to him. He doesn't like getting hit in the face. Nobody does, but some people like Robbie Lowe, it doesn't really affect him that much. Like, it doesn't throw him off mentally at all. He can have the gas tank to go 5 rounds when he's out of gas in the second. Right. St. Pierre doesn't want to lose an exchange. He doesn't want to be on top. Will change his entire fighting style. Will change everything about how he trains so that he doesn't get caught. A la Matsera, right? Robbie Lawler's not doing that. Robbie Lawler's going, I got caught. Like, I'm just going to knock the next guy out. St. Pierre is like, head explodes losing, right? So a little bit different. And then the third one is an athlete. So same thing. They're not natural fighters. They're not as obsessed with losing, but they're just insanely athletic. Right. Classic examples here would be Brock Lesnar. Super athlete, right? At a fighter, no chance. But he's so athletic, he can walk in with one career fight and almost beat Frank Mir. And then two career fights beat him, right? He's fighting for a world championship in 4 fights with no skills, really. Just, he's a mega athlete. Like, mega athlete. John Jones is a mega athlete, right? So we have these, like, real legit next level, you could be in the NFL type of athletes. Nick Diaz, Nate Diaz have no prayer of ever playing any professional sport ever, right? They're not even close. So why this stuff is important? You can gear how you train, how you assess them, even how you approach them based on kind of understanding. Okay, Nick Diaz, you are an elite fighter, the best of the best, right? In this area. But what would Nick, or Nate for that matter, where would they suffer? Do you think they are world caliber athlete? Do you think they're world caliber competitors? Well, they're both pretty close especially Nick, to being a world champion, because they are also extremely competitive, right? They will not give up. You're not going to see them curl up and then tap to these things, right? It's just not going to happen. Clearly, their limitation is in the athletic side of it. Clearly. So you can always predict that they're going to lose to more athletic people if they don't break their will, right? They're just never going to be able to stack up. And you pick a single person in the 170 or 155 pound division is ranked. They're all more athletic than Nate Diaz, right? So he's going to lose the same style. Well, the inverse would be true to George St. Pierre. Who's going to beat George St. Pierre? Somebody who has a Nick Diaz style, who can defend a takedown, who doesn't care, and who can catch them, right? Because they're in there to just wing, and they don't really care about losing the points as much as he does. So when you train and when you approach and you talk, and I give a system, if I gave the same exact system to Brian Ortega, who is as natural of a fighter as I've ever been around, right? I gave that same thing to George St. Pierre. George is going to be like, but I have questions. Like, where's this here? Why aren't we doing this? Like, how is this built in? And Brian's like, cool, man, we're going to train today. Fuck yeah, let's roll. What are we doing? Sparring. Fine, whatever. Like, he just loves fighting. He just wants to. I mean, that guy's been in more street fights than I guarantee you George has probably sparred rounds in his life, right? So I can't give them the same system. I can't even approach it. I can't do the same assessment, right? I don't need to ask Brian Ortega if he freaks out, if he, you know, gets mental anxiety on the way to the cage. I know the answer is no. I know the answer is no. But you know why? Because then he tells me things like, oh yeah, before the Max Ortega fight or Max Holloway fight, I was just laying down in the back and I put my mouthpiece in and they said, let's go. And I got up and went out and fight. No warm up? Nope. No warm up. Hit the pads? Nope. Just walked out there and fought. Why? It's just a fight. Cool. Got it, right? So now I know, okay, Brian, we could probably get things a little bit better if we do some warm up before. So let's build him a specific warm up routine. Let's breathe you a breathing thing that brings you back down, right? I maybe don't need to invest the time in building George St. Pierre and I did a warm up routine because he probably has it. He's probably had it and he would probably not like it if he had to walk out without getting to do his warm up. He'd probably actually throw him off a little bit. You get the idea, right? I need to clarify something before I keep going. I don't work with George St. Pierre, I never have. Brian, yes, but not George. So I don't want people to think I'm saying these things. So you can just project on them, is what the point. So going back to the original point, like this is what I'm really doing is I'm trying to figure out, okay, where is he? And then now when I communicate to a George St. Pierre type, I would use a lot of detail. Like, we want to do this many rounds today. I want you to do this. I want to keep the session this, keep your heart rate here. Let's not go over this many beats, eat this, have this many almonds. Measure your protein here. If I tried to do that with Brian, it's worse. I made his system actually worse. I got to go concepts, right? Hey, today's a hard day. Get after it. Okay, day's finished. What'd you do? Tell me. Okay, now I have to work things backwards after what you did because there's just no way I can do those things with him. It's just not going to work. If I work with coaches, so I would do a similar thing with the coaches. So is it a high detail coach, right? Is it a low detail coach? Some coaches, I have to say things like, hey, it's an easy day. Don't do too much. Other coaches, we can get into, hey, let's have heart rate here. Let's say, you know, let's look at his HRV today. Where are we at? Blah, blah, blah. And so I'm not going to ask a coach to do something that's completely out of their skill set. It's just, why would you expect anything to work? Like you put a treat in the floor and you said, don't eat that dog. And you come back 2 days later. What the fuck? Like, geez, really? Is it the dog's fault or is it that stupid on your part? It's just stupid on my part. So that's what I would really do. And again, this is the broad approach that I would take with their dietitian, if they have one, with their S&C coach, if they have one, with their head coach. If I'm not that person, like, who is it? What are we doing? I'm not telling them what to do in terms of the drills. You build the skill development. But now 20 minutes later, I'll finally answer your question. Once we're in the room, all of us coaches, and we can go through these things, then we can sit and go, okay, look, Jordy is 8 out of 10 in all these things. He's 7 or higher in this, and this. But he's 3 or lower in these things. We have a fight in 10 weeks. Boxing coach, how do you win this fight? How do you lose this fight? Wrestling coach, how do we win this fight? How do we lose this fight? Fighter, how do you win? How do you lose? That's what I always ask. How do you win? How do you lose, right? Okay, we're all on the same page now. We have 10 weeks. What do we want to prioritize? And I give them 10 points. You get 10 points to spend. How do you want to spend them? We want to spend 3 on boxing defense. We want to spend 3 on conditioning. And we want to spend, oh, what's left? 4 on his his foot speed is too slow. Okay, great. And then we'll have a conversation. No, I want to spend wrestling coach. We need to have 2 or 10. We need to have 3. Okay, whatever. We can hash this out. And it's actually usually pretty simple. But when we sit there and we look and we go, hey, look, Jordy's won 7 world titles in kickboxing. He's a 3-time boxing world champion. He's got the green belt in Muay Thai. And he's going to fight George St. Pierre. And Jordy's never wrestled in his life. So Muay Thai coach, we're not going to do much with you right now. Are we? And it's really not that hard of a conversation when I go to the extremes, right? And so when you have numbers and you can look and you go, we're 8 out of 10 here. I know you want to get better, but we have a fight in 10 weeks and we are going to lose the fight because of this. And if I were to say that example, and then you went in and you got taken down and held down and you look back and you said, actually, I spent about 50% of my time kickboxing and 50% of my time wrestling. You'd be like, that's the dumbest thing ever. Why did you do that? You knew it was going to happen and you didn't prepare for it. If you went and spent 90% of your time wrestling and you still got wrestling beat, you'd be like, okay, well, like, But you wouldn't look back and be like, geez, I knew I was fighting someone who's going to shoot a single leg on me. And I didn't actually spend more than 10% of my training time on single leg. It wouldn't make any sense. And it's not difficult for the coaches to buy in once they see those numbers in front of them. And so then you say, okay, we decided 50% of our training is going to be on defending a single leg. Okay, 5 of our 10 points for this camp. Well, in camp, we've got 10 weeks and we've got 10 training sessions per week. That's 100 training sessions. If you want to spend 50% of our time, that means you get 50 sessions to do that. Okay, how do you want to break them up? Okay, boxing coach, you got 20%, so you're going to get 20 total sessions or whatever the number is, right? And then you start to build the week so that we can maintain the priority. The priority is defending this damn single leg. Okay, great. Well, then we're probably going to have that first in the day or when the ideal time, like based on whatever. And this doesn't always work this way, but you get the concept that we're trying to get after here, right? And so then when you get into it and something happens and the athlete's tired, has to skip a session or something, and the boxing coach goes, oh, no, like you got to come over. Don't skip my session. Just come to my session. Don't go to wrestling. And the wrestling coach goes, no, like you got to come to my session. Don't skip the boxing session. And the athlete's like, well, now it's easy because it's like, no, this is a wrestling party right now. Whether it's this camp or this month or this week even, whatever, I have those all spelled out. I have a daily priority, I have a weekly priority, I have a camp priority for the individuals. Like, and this is all in a document that they get, all the coaches, color document, everything before. And so they can look and go, it's week 7, day 4. Oh, this wrestling day. There's no questions here. Like, this is what we already pre-decided. Now, when things change, we want to get back together as a group and we want to say, hey, we've changed priorities because this and this and this, and this happens all the time. Cool, no problem. But without that conversation, it becomes very difficult for the athlete to be put in a bad position. And then it's also, as you get through the camp and as these things go on, it's easy for the athlete to go, oh, look, like, damn wrestling coach, this is like, he's never listening. Everyone on the same team is on the same page, and this guy's always not listening. This guy's always doing what we're not asking him to. And then they tend to handle that situation, right? Either they step up and say, you work for me, that's what we're doing, or they find somebody else who's going to pay attention if they become a problem. And I've been a part of both of those situations, right, because of that. So I'm not the one in control. I'm just helping everyone communicate as a team so we understand what that true priority is, which is your question, right, at the very beginning. Like, where is the priority? That's how I help them identify what it is and how to move forward. Then the bigger piece on top of all that is, are we in camp? This has always been like an in-camp example. Okay, great. Camp's now over. We fought, we won, we lost, whatever. When do we think we're going to fight again, roughly? And now what do we want to develop so that when we walk into camp, you can have this to do? I prefer physical development outside of camp, fight development in camp. Unless you have a huge fight development issue. Like you got a Patrick Cummins who steps into the sport, you know, at 30 years old. And it's like, you're physically a monster. You just have to figure out how to box. So like, this is all we're doing for until the day you retire, basically. Other folks, if you're Sean O'Malley, man, okay. Like we want to think about this in like a 5 to 8 year plan. So we need to invest the time right now developing you physically so that you can not just win this fight. And this is another major mistake folks have, right? You're 23 years old, 24, and like you're always just optimizing for the next fight. Like, we want a physical development plan so that 5 fights from now you're winning world title and then you defend it 12 times like Anderson Silva. That takes long-term planning or luck, right? Well, we want a hedge towards the planning. So all those things get factored in. So when I work with an athlete, like that's where my head is at. My head is on, okay, where is this fit in the 5-year plan? How about the year plan? How about this fight camp? And then where do I see this picture going? And then I can lay that out to coaches by saying, hey, right now we just got back from a fight. We're healthy. We're starting to train again. I just did this with Lauren Murphy, right? Prior to signing this camp, it was like, we all came to the same page. This is where we want to go. So the off season, if you will, we address some issues that we honestly haven't had time to get to in like a year and a half. We finally had time to get to them. We saw huge improvements in this area. Huge. Fight camp got signed and I was like, switching priorities. Now you get her. This is a priority. Let's roll. Get ready for a fight. So that's how I, my short answer to your question. You can talk now, I guess. It's been 30 minutes.
No, it's incredible the degree of specificity that comes in. And I guess at elite level sport, that's what you need. That's what you need because, like, I guess in every conversation in science, it's so individual and you really need to identify that. And my brain was just racing when you were going through the personality traits. I was going through all my fighters and I was going, this one's that, this one's that. And then thinking, yes, that is the way we talk to him. That is why we do that. And it's like, yeah, it's completely true. I do want to ask her, Andy, is this system, is it just applicable for these high level, elite level professionals? Or how do you go about, say, distilling it for the guys that are, say, on the cusp of breaking it in or even lower if you're getting to the amateur ranks? Do they need that degree of specificity to progress up to that level in like a long-term plan? Or is this something that you would take into and address when they get up there, when they get into the UFC or they get into the ONE or they get into Bellator?
Do they need it? No. Would they benefit from it? I would strongly argue. Yeah, like to me, this is an appropriate development model. I would actually argue, and I did this in the last season of my podcast, I can't remember the episode number, but the last season it's in there. I think this is something you can use in general personal training clients. 100%, right? It is trying to look at the big picture all the way down to what are we doing. And so the way I always say it is you're balancing short-term with long-term gratification. It's the short game versus the long game. It's optimizing right now versus inducing long-term adaptation. You don't want to be all the way on one side of the spectrum or the other. Major problems. So you want to understand, when do I go towards one side? When do I go to the other side? And when do I just play it in the middle? So I think you're talking about developing an athlete. You should look at the individual. You got a 19-year-old. Oh gosh, we got some real potential in this girl. Okay, great. Where's the potential? Is it just, you got a Kylan Curran and you're like, she's just a natural fighter. Just Hawaiian, just loves to fight. Okay, great. Physically pretty solid here. But we have these holes skill-wise. In her example, it was grappling, right? You want to make it to where we think you can make it because we see real, not only physical potential, but we see real superstar going to be able to make a real good living potential. Okay, you're 19. She was 21 or something, like 22 maybe. Okay, we needed to have a sort of a 3-4-5-year plan for this development. And so we needed to do things what we would call in the world of Olympic weightlifting, where you would basically train through the meet, which is, in other words, yeah, we're going to take this fight, but we're not training for this fight because I want you to just kind of get through it. We think you have enough skill right now to win, and you have enough, in her case, like you're such a talented fighter and your like fighting aspect. Your eyes are so good just naturally, and you just love fighting. You don't mind getting punched. That'll get you through these next couple of fights. That'll get you into the UFC, but we want to make this long range. We got to build this whole thing. Now, it turned out it didn't work in that particular case, to that kind of mega level. But yeah, I mean, I think the point is, I think this is how you develop mega stars. You might get lucky and catch the occasional, Izzy, and you might get folks like that. But most likely, if you want to consistently put people in these, hey, you can make a living doing this, I think this is how you would want to approach them.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's super fascinating, right? And I guess we could talk for hours, but I'm very mindful of our time, Dr. Galpin. For people that's listening in, obviously you have a YouTube channel, you have your website, books, heaps and heaps of resources. If guys want to learn more about this or they want to get in contact with you and learn more or potentially even work with you if you have the capability, what's the best way for these guys to get more info or get in touch with you?
Yeah, the best resource is everything up on... Everything I have one book, but you don't even need to buy it. I don't even know if you can buy it down there, to be honest. Everything I do is basically free. It's all up on YouTube. So I put a lot of my classes, a lot of this stuff, goes up on YouTube in giant lectures all for free. So if you want to see more kind of the updated stuff, of course, social media, Instagram and Twitter are the places to go for those things. So in terms of if you want to work for me, work with me, we'll see. But I don't do the best answering social media DMs and stuff. Like, I struggle. It's just too much. Like, I got texts and emails and just things coming in all the way. So, if you know somebody, that's a better way to go about it. And that knows me. That's probably your safer bet. You could dig up my email, I guess, if you really wanted to. I mean, you could try a DM, so I'll take a look there, but it's tough. We'll see. I'm always open. Like, I always like bringing new people on occasionally, but it's gotta be the right flavor.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, and the results speak for themselves. Speaking of what's coming up next, I know we've only got a couple minutes left, but you've got a lot going on. Like you said, you've got the uni, you've got fights coming up. We were talking about Fight Island. What's coming up in the next little while for Dr. Galpin?
Man, I got one guy, one of my Major League Baseball guys, he's getting real close to maybe winning a Cy Young. So I'm watching that one pretty heat. He's got 2 weeks left in the season. Trevor Bauer is my guy there. So he gets a lot of love and a lot of attention right now. Brian Ortega on Fight Island, Lauren Murphy right after that are the two ones that are popping out. And the rest I'm probably blanking on because I'm not thinking about. Those are the ones I guess I can announce. They're the ones we aren't out yet. But, yeah, that'll be the big one. So big day for both of them are title eliminator fights. So, like my wife said, like October might be the worst month of my life or it could be the best. So we'll see. Hopefully it leads us to having a couple of world title fights in January. So they've both been told they're one away.
Yeah. We'll be keeping our eyes peeled on the Ortega fight.
Oh, I'm sure. Because
this guy right here has to maybe see him across the octagon. But anyway.
Hey, just so you know, part of this whole, like developmental plan stuff, we project out in the future. So we know who we're fighting.
And we've been
training for people for a while. So.
Yeah, that's right. Well, anyway, Dr. Galpin, I'm mindful of your time, so I'll let you get back to it, but thanks so much.
You got it, man. It's a pleasure to be here.
And there it is, another episode of the Fight Science Podcast. Dr. Andy Galpin has been progressing the field of human performance for well over a decade, and his work with combat athletes never ceases to amaze me. I highly encourage you to follow his work to level up in your understanding of the human body and performance. This podcast will be available through the podcast app, iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, and you'll also be able to download it from my website, www.thefightdietitian.com/podcast. If you enjoy listening to the podcast, then be sure to head to the podcast app to give us a rating and leave us a review. Thanks for listening in, and I'll see you guys for the next episode of the Fight Science Podcast.